Hey everyone. So we've been doing St. Anthony's Tongue now for over a year, and I wanted to spend the next few weeks doing a few reflections, just some of the things I've noticed, some of the things I've learned, some of my biggest spiritual takeaways from podcasting over the last 15 or so months. And then after this series, I will be taking a brief hiatus to write and record the next season of St. Anthony's Tongue, which I'm very excited about. We're going to dive heavily into mysticism, but also some of the same fun saint topics that we've been doing the past year. This reflection is kind of a big one, but kind of an obvious one. I wanted to talk about this concept of Catholic witchcraft, Catholic folk magic, and just the topic of witchcraft and magic in general. So here are my takeaways that have just kind of come naturally after doing all of these deep dives into saints, into cultural practices, and more. I hope you enjoy, and I look forward to sharing the next few reflections with all of you. Take care. Peace be with you and with your spirit. Welcome to a special series of St. Anthony's Tongue, where we will be exploring some of the main themes and reflections that I've had after a year of doing this podcast. And I'd like to start with kind of a large one. Now, none of this should be a surprise to you. Everything that I'm about to say now, I have said in other episodes, I have said on social media, so on and so forth. But this concept of Catholic witchcraft or Catholic magic is a very unique one, and it seems to arise quite often, and largely because there is a lot of people who consider themselves magical practitioners who have some kind of devotions to saints. So there's always been that intersection with St. Anthony's Tongue and people who enjoy the title of witch or magician. And over time, in discussing rituals of the saints and cultural practices with the saints, I have uncovered a lot in this area that I do want to reflect on in this special episode, so let's jump in. First, what is magic and witchcraft anyway? I began this podcast at a time in which terms like witchcraft and magic were at their peak of popularity. They're probably still up there right now. But these terms deserve some reflection in of themselves. What do they mean? Now today, the term witchcraft is being used as a bit of a catch-all. It's being used for things like astrology, herbalism, fairly open-ended concepts too, like manifestation, cleansing, and protection. And as many of you probably know, 5 years ago or so, we were just calling these things New Age. But recent times, they have been kind of incorporated under this witchcraft title and witchcraft umbrella. And this has created a lot of confusion for a few reasons, but one main reason is when you look at very old church documents and things like that, like protection from witches in a biblical sense, more so speaks to protection from people who want to poison you and kill your babies, not someone who enjoys rocks. Very different. But again, that terminology, that umbrella, we're putting all of these things under witchcraft, which can cause some confusion. You do, though, have what people would call traditional witchcraft, though. And that usually entails some form of allegiance to another power, another entity, and that can vary from region to region and thought process from thought process. And people have also lumped neo-paganism under the witch umbrella as well, and that's going to be important for later in this reflection. And similarly, alongside witchcraft, another term has popped up, and that term is folk magic. And that relies on cultural traditions of spirituality to create, to petition, to protect, and so on. And sometimes the terminology overlaps, right? In witchcraft, you would call something a spell, and now folk magic these days, we call things spells too. And much like we discussed in the folk Catholicism episode, the term folk magic is also fairly new terminology. The people who performed what today people may call folk magic, they may have called it something totally different if they called it anything at all, it might just have been the things we do. And tying it to St. Anthony's tongue, in both of these avenues, and the modern umbrella term witchcraft, the modern term folk magic, saints have arisen in both of these categories, sometimes in a syncretic way. For instance, I'm praying to Papa Legba, but under the guise of St. Peter. Or St. Martha has another face called Martha the Dominator, which looks very much like some Caribbean deities. And sometimes this saint veneration, devotion, it's still there, but maybe not in a syncretic way. For instance, I might not identify as a Christian, but praying to St. Anthony, I will do that because I lost my wallet. Or I might not identify as a Catholic, but St. Christopher, I know that he will protect me during this flight. Or St. Michael will cleanse my home of negative energy. So it's also there in a more cultural setting as well, the saint aspect of it. And if you look at this current rise of magic, witchcraft, so on and so forth, you have kind of the similar spiritual components or needs. The most common things and reasons people do quote-unquote magic for is usually manifestation, petitioning, protection, cleansing, usually some form of ritual is involved, divination, and in some cases, some kind of spiritual guide or spiritual support from an external spiritual entity. And I'm stating all of this to set up a point here in a bit. So, we've talked about magic and witchcraft in a couple minutes. There's much more we could say. I know if you are a historian or a cultural anthropologist, I know I skimmed over so much. But let's put a pin in that, and now let's go to the St. Anthony's Tongue podcast. The podcast was and is intended to focus on the saints. By the way, I have used terms like folk magic, witchcraft, so on and so forth. And in the podcast, we discuss some of the stories that have been attributed to the saints. We talk about their stories, their attributes, and how various people approach them. And this is going to include the most traditional of Catholics and how they revere and see the saints, but it's also going to veer into some of the more occult beliefs at times too. And that's going to veer into the audiences of folk magic and maybe modern witchcraft folks. So take St. Martha, for example. She is seen as a patron of hospitality to traditional Catholics, but in some folk communities, she's seen as Martha the Dominator, who can put a stop to an abusive boss or an abusive lover. Similarly, St. Anthony. St. Anthony is the finder of lost things. However, in some folk communities, he is seen as a matchmaker, a very strong matchmaker on the side of love spells. So you have all of that, and the podcast is going to explore everything under the umbrella, from how the most traditionalist of Catholics view these saints, to where more of the folk-leaning Catholics, to those into the occult see these saints. So that was the, and still is, the view and the mission of St. Anthony's Tongue. But what I discovered very early on, and this was mentioned throughout the podcast, is that most of these saint rituals and practices that people consider witchy or magical, and the practices that people flock to the most, are 100% traditional Catholicism. Sure, some of them may be very cultural, and they might not be practiced widely, and some more stuffy Catholics might turn up their nose to it. But those who practice these cultural rituals, they don't consider themselves folk magicians, folk Catholics, Catholic witches. They often just consider themselves Catholics. And this very much mirrors what I discussed in my Reconstruction episode, which was kind of a turning point for the podcast. But for instance, I'll give you some examples. Burying 4 St. Benedict medals for protection in your yard. That seems very witchy, very magical. But that is just a culturally Catholic belief, or you might say a folk Catholic belief, if you prefer that terminology, that even priests suggest. A lot of priests in recent times have suggested that because there's kind of this blossoming spiritual warfare movement, which I've discussed the pros and cons of that in past episodes. But burying 4 St. Benedict medals in your yard sounds very magical, but very common. I'm recording this the week before the Feast of Epiphany. A very common practice is using blessed chalk and holy water to write CMB in the year on your door so evil will pass you by, or other views or stories say the 3 magi will visit you and give you gifts that year of luck and prosperity. Again, Seems very magical. You're essentially writing a sigil on your front door. But my church is putting together bags this week to hand out at Mass. Similarly, you have St. Joseph's altar, St. Joseph's table, where if you take a fava bean from the blessed table, your wallet will never be empty and your pantry will never be dry. Or alternatively, you take a nail from the table and you hammer it into your door, and only good luck will enter your home for the rest of the year. Again, seems very witchy, magical, but quite common. The St. Benedict medal is essentially a sigil amulet that will protect you from demons. Certain oils or relic oils for healing is very common. Catholics make pilgrimages to certain saint shrines, saint graves, and usually they will get oil from the church there, and that oil can be used for healing, or cleansing, or protecting, or really whatever you're petitioning that saint for. And that's really no different than the herbal protection oil that folk witches sell on their Etsy shops. So as I began researching saints and trying to pull these esoteric practices, there have been some, and I discussed them and I will continue to discuss them. But by and large, these practices I found, most of the weird and magical things, are the things that the little old ladies at church already do. And when it came and comes to my own personal spirituality, I found that I'm totally comfortable just staying in that lane. And if you remember the list of things I mentioned earlier that I said we would put a pin in, all of that is found in traditional Catholic practices. For instance, candle spells. You know, I'm going to light a candle, I might roll it around in herbs, and I'm going to make a petition. Well, that's a novena. You light a candle to a saint, and if you want to put herbs in there, there's nothing stopping you. It's the same thing. Similarly, manifestation spells. Well, those are prayers, and you have many. You have certain prayers for certain things. You have prayers for health, you have prayers for prosperity, you have prayers for protection, but you can also dedicate the rosary to a cause. There's actually many manifestation type practices. That's not what it's called, but it is involving the rosary. In fact, a promise of the rosary was that you will get whatever you ask for, as long as God allows it, and that is a big difference here. But that was actually a promise of the rosary given to Saint Dominic, is you will use this to ask Mary for things. Similarly, Ignatian prayer, where you put yourself into a biblical story or a mystery of the rosary and you ask for things, you ask for advice, so on and so forth. Another thing is spiritual allies or deity veneration. You have a lot of that in the magic and witchcraft movement, where people are turning to neo-paganism or turning to certain spirits. Well, we have the saints. In fact, we have the saints who also have specialties. So instead of calling upon a deity or a pagan god, we just call upon our friends, the saints. Of course, you have cleansing rituals and various magical practices. Well, holy water and prayers also do that. Banishing. Well, the Catholic Church actually has a very deep practice of banishing, and a lot of people aren't familiar with it, and I do have an episode on this. It's deliverance prayers. These are prayers that anyone can use to cast out, yes, evil demons, but also the spirit of anxiety, the spirit of fear, the spirit of negative energy. And like I said before, healing. Well, you have healing rituals and folk magic and witchcraft. Well, you have relic oils and you have many healing prayers. In fact, most saint miracles involve some kind of healing. And then you have divination, and I'm going to do a full episode on divination, but there's a lot of side-by-side comparisons one can make with divination. You have a lot of divination in the Old Testament and the Bible, but you also have this thing called signal graces, where there are prayers you can do, and the Our Lady of Sorrows, Seven Sorrows Chaplet is actually one where you ask for what's called a signal grace. Give me a sign. Here is my problem. Give me my sign, which is pretty similar to divination. And again, we're going to do a full episode on this, but the issue with divination is prophecy, but calling upon the Holy Spirit to help you with spiritual direction using the Bible, using tarot cards, using dice, it's totally fine. And there's a lot of nuance to that statement that I will save for another episode. But the point is that most of these things that you see in the magical circles, I found right in front of me from my research on the saints and research on these practices. And yes, you do have more folksy things like limpias or evil eye prayers. But your grandmother who did those, she rarely called herself a witch. Most likely not. She probably just called herself a Catholic. And this is no major revelation. I'm not making some kind of big statement here. This is mentioned in a lot of folk magical books. Mary Grace Farren's Italian Folk Magic says it in the intro. You know, I learned these things from my grandmother, these evil eye rituals, so on and so forth, from my grandmother who didn't consider herself a witch. That would have been an insult. Another one would be The Things We Do by Agostino Tamaturgio, who mentions, again, these terms are new. Our ancestors who practiced these things just called themselves Catholics. So, all in all, my reflection for this episode is, in essence, in digging into certain cultural rituals involving the saints, I found that what people are seeking magically are already in Catholicism, and some of the most out there rituals with saints are done just by Catholics. And yes, this is where people get into things like folk Catholicism. And I get into that in a full episode because that terminology is starting to mean various things, various valid things to many people. And they're drawn to practices, but not necessarily institution, and that's very understandable. But in short, when people use terms like Catholic witches or ask me about Catholic folk magic, most of the time in that conversation, the things they tell me that they're interested in or that they're doing is just Catholicism. And yes, like I said, many people will agree with everything I'm saying. They're just going to say, I don't consider myself a Catholic due to the institution, so I put witch or magician or folk in front of it because I don't want to be seen like them. I don't want to be seen like the bigots and the people I disagree with. And that's fair. And I'm going to be jumping into that in a future reflection. I do get into that in my full Catholicism episode, because there are a lot of misconceptions on theology and on teachings, though, and I learned a lot over the last year. So I hope you check back for that topic soon. But let's talk again about the church, about magic. Doesn't the church frown on magic? And what are the key differences? What makes this different from magic? So first, correct, the church does frown on the term magic, but still has elements that we cannot deny people today are calling magical. And that's the issue. The term magic and, by and large, the term witchcraft are so loose and vague that it's hard to say what it is and is not. But largely, the institution would not say that any of these things are magic because they aren't. To Catholics, these things are just the way of God. It's the system that God gave his people. There's a heavenly army of saints and angels who their whole role is to assist us. When we die, we do not become angels. We become saints in heaven who intercede. You and I will hopefully become saints too. So our prayers and petitions are just calling upon this realm. It's not seen as magic. It's just seen as the way the Catholic and largely Christian spiritual system works. Similarly, and this is a very important distinction, the result of a prayer or a novena or anything, it's still up to the will of God and not us. And that can be a distinction between magical practitioners and so on and so forth who seek to get results from something inside of them rather than an external source, like a god or an angel. And while some magical practitioners, they do look to trap or trick God or a god through an idol, in a Catholic setting, that's a no-no. You must be willing to trust the will of God. I just use the word will a lot in that sentence. However, in a folk environment, you still see that though, in a folk Catholic environment, because saint punishment exists, right? Which is just that. You're trying to trick or punish a saint so they work harder on your behalf. So you still have that. And similarly, there is pushback on some of these more magical leaning Catholic beliefs, as they can lead to superstition. And let's talk about superstition. The issue with superstition isn't that it's going to piss off God, and that is such a big misconception, and that is so tainted by Puritanism and Protestantism. Yes, God can be seen as a wrathful entity. Fine, that's fine. That's true. But by and large, a lot of these things aren't because you're going to piss off God. It's because you're going to warp your own view of God. Let me explain. I have people ask me all the time, what happens if I miss a novena prayer? Or what happens if I use the wrong color candle? What if I blow out my novena candle instead of snuffing it? And this leads me to respond, do you think God or the saints are so weak and petty that a single missed prayer is going to ruin your chances of assistance? Or worse, if doing these simple things, quote unquote, wrong, is going to piss them off and cause God to damn you? No, not at all. God is not petty. God is not going to damn you because you blew out the candle instead of snuffed it. Your prayers are not going to go unanswered because you used a white candle instead of a red one. God is not petty. God is not a trickster. Neither are his saints. Now, is this a part of saint folklore? Yes, absolutely, sometimes. And because of that, I will discuss it on occasion in the podcast, but with those proper disclaimers. And similarly, this style of thought, it can lead to a very obsessive belief that if you don't bury your four saint medals in your yard, your house is going to get haunted, or if you aren't wearing the brown scapular, you're going to be more prone to demonic attack. And that's just not true. So the push away from superstition isn't because it promotes a magical belief that's antithetical to church teaching, sometimes it is, but largely it's because it can lead you to see God as this petty trickster rather than a loving God. And I will also say this superstition exists even the most traditionalist of Catholic circles. Right now, there are debates about getting communion in the hand versus the tongue, one being invalid, or not having the proper posture at certain points of the Mass being insulting to God. Again, do we believe that God is so petty that his grace is no longer valid because we outstretched our arms at the wrong time in Mass, or that we took a swig of coffee and we broke our Eucharistic fast? Again, my God is not that petty. I don't know about yours. And I have a full reflection on the saints coming soon, so I'm going to save a lot of this next tidbit for that. But this same superstition and issue can occur with saint offerings too. And the whole concept of offerings, it deserves a lot of nuance. And I'm going to get into that in my next reflection. But offering a saint something, like a house key to a St. Joseph statue if he helped you buy a house, that's common. But if we see this as, I need to put this key in front of the St. Joseph statue or he's going to curse my house and it burns down, then that's problematic. Often, a promise or an offering should traditionally be a promise to assist others. I'm going to do community service, not bake a cake or a pie, and if it's gross, the saint's going to poison me. But again, this is a common piece of cultural Catholicism, so it will always be discussed in the podcast. And I think another key differentiator between what you could call magic or witchcraft and what you're seeing in this, for lack of a better term, Catholic magic, is the goal. You know, one thing, which again, we're going to get into in a future reflection, is the end goal. And this is kind of hard to verbalize, so bear with me. But for me, the goal when praying to the saints, or even doing something like a cleansing session in my home, the goal isn't to do magical stuff. That's not the goal. The goal is to find happiness and to find peace. We are to find union with God, love him, and eventually we too will become like the saints in heaven. But it's about union here on earth too, about making the kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. So if I am asking for something, it's so I can have a better life so that I can love God and love others and serve others in my life. Or if I'm cleansing a home, it might be because I feel like something in the home is stopping me or the people from communing with God. So the goal isn't, again, it's not about power, or it's not about getting stuff, it's about communion, and it's always about communion. So if we are uniting a magical practice to a theistic practice, that means there has to be a theistic component. And like I said, my goal isn't to get stuff, it's communion. And even if I go to God in prayer with my petitions and he grants them, great. But if he doesn't, that's great too, because it's his will and I have trust that there will be something that is going to assist me spiritually in my union in the future. So the main goal is just to go to him in prayer anyway, so that he may do as he deems fit. And a lot of times there's this overemphasis on getting what we need and doing a spell, novena, or what have you every time we need something. We need this now, so I'm just going to pull out the spell book, pull out the candles, pull out the novena cards. And this can happen in traditional circles and more spiritual, magical leaning circles. But this creates this mentality of grasping and desire. which is very spiritually and mentally dangerous. This is what the Tibetan Buddhists call the hungry ghost realm. We walk around with these big mouths just consuming everything, but we're never satiated, we're never satisfied. We always want more, want more, want more. But a novena and kind of the Catholic magic, the Catholic spirituality is I'm going forth, I'm calling upon the saints, I'm calling upon these very ancient beings in some cases to assist me. And if I get what I need, beautiful. But if I don't, I have done everything I could spiritually, and now it is at the foot of God and I can walk away. And that is very mentally beautiful and mentally calming for me at least. And I hear things a lot, like I went to St. Rita or so on and she wanted nothing to do with me. But I can assure you, your prayers were heard. There's just something you need to learn there. You just have to listen to it. And there's this mystical component of spirituality that's often missed, both by the more magically in tune and the more traditional folks. The more magic of us, we just want the stuff. We just want the magic ritual to work. We're focused on the outcome, we're focused on the efficacy, and then we abandon it if it does not work, while the complete opposite is the more traditional route. They're so caught up in rules and sin, and if I should or should not do this, I have to do this a certain way, that they totally forget the actual union part. They overlook the meeting with God because they too see God as petty sometimes, that you have to pray over and over and over again. You need to do your daily rosary, not because you love that time with God, but because if you don't, God is going to get mad. But what I am suggesting is this middle path, that you go forth with this ritual and petition in mind, and you do it with your whole heart, but then you sit there with God in your moment, and you leave everything at your home altar, at the Blessed Sacrament, church, wherever, and then you leave. So therefore, you are getting that ritual in which you can add on to and make your own in your own ways. That's beautiful. I'm always a component of that. But you're leaving it there so God can do his work. So you're getting everything. You're getting that moment of union, that moment of reassurance, while also getting that ritual you enjoy. And I have not discussed that too often, but I think we should also mention, because I'm using traditional beliefs in a magical context. However, that's not to say that you cannot add on to the things you like. If you are doing a novena and you're doing it to Mary, no one's gonna get angry if you wanna put rose petals in your novena candle. No one is going to get angry if you want to add a new prayer or if you want to do some kind of oil that you made. There's nothing wrong with that. And of course, I think one differentiator between this folk magic and Catholicism thing is, of course, the sacraments. And this might seem like a large one, but I don't really think it is. Yes, the Eucharist is a healing food for all, and it's literally accepting God into our bodies. And the other sacraments, they don't negate this world of wonder and, I'm using air quotes, magic. And you might be wondering, well, W, don't we have to be baptized and confirmed to do these sacramentals? To take the Eucharist, yes. But to pray the rosary to the saints? No. To pray a rosary dedicated to Mary? No. To do a novena? No. To run to Mary when we need her? No. To pray to God to remove evil from a place or in your heart? No. Again, God is not petty. He's not going to leave you or abandon you or not assist you because you didn't join the right club. Though the saints and God, they might lead you to joining the club. So don't be surprised if that happens. But no, all of this can be done at your home altar. So you might be wondering next, but don't only Catholics go to heaven? Aren't they the only ones worthy of these tools? No. Without getting too much into salvation and theology, which is going to be another reflection, no. And hopefully you've listened to enough of my podcast where you know that's my line of thinking, because I have many episodes that discuss heaven, hell, and a case for universalism. But the church teaches that rays of truth exist in all forms of religion. Similarly, any person who follows a good conscience, they may enter the kingdom. But the church does say that the church is the so-called preferred path, and it's a guarantee in their eyes. But this fear-mongering tactic that only Christians go to heaven, it's not Catholic theology at all. But it's often painted that way, especially in the West. So in short, yes, the Eucharist is a differentiator, but all are welcome to pray. All are always welcome to pray. So in short, what makes just Catholicism unique from magic is, one, it's not believed to be magic. It's just the way Catholicism communes with the saints and the Holy Spirit. And the next is there's this element of surrender and leaving things to the will of God that I think is sometimes lost in other magical circles. And there shouldn't be an emphasis on the details, but instead an emphasis on trusting God and the saints. Otherwise, this can lead to scrupulosity and this warped view of God as a trickster instead of a loving father. And in some way, the sacraments do make it unique. And also, the goal isn't really to get what we need, but to form a closer relationship to God and create a life that brings peace. And in that peace, we can unite with God more freely. So in conclusion, I just did want to talk about this concept of magic because it is a term that is used so broadly and vaguely. I called it Catholic magic multiple times in this episode alone. But my reflection is that in doing this research, I have found that all I need to improve my life, my well-being, my health, the health of others and family, my career, my spirituality has been found just in this path, and I haven't found the need to stray out of it. And you may find that need. You may feel comfort in using another label, and I understand. But my reflection is that the magic many people seek is inherently in this space, and there's a very ancient tradition of it. And we will still venture into the occult, into the magical and the mystical. I had this reflection and revelation very early on in the podcast, and we've still always talked about the occult, the magical, and the mystical. I actually just did two Patreon pieces, audio and a written piece about the syncretism of St. Lazarus and St. Martha with native deities. I also just shared a traditional Italian Christmas Eve curse because it's part of cultural Catholic practices. So these will always be part of the podcast because I like them. They're cool. They're interesting. They're fascinating. But personally, I've found that there's so much magic just inherently in Catholicism. And phrases like Catholic witchcraft and folk Catholic magician, they just don't make much sense to me. As the things described under this Catholic witchcraft umbrella, they're just often Catholic stuff. And yes, I haven't breached the topic in full of those who have issue with the institution, and thus they prefer to say folk Catholic or Catholic witch to separate themselves. I understand that desire, and I have discussed it a little bit on my folk Catholicism episode. I'm going to be reflecting more so on the institution as well versus the people, so on and so forth, in this reflection series soon. But that wraps it up. Thank you for hanging out with me as I ramble into a microphone for half an hour. But yeah, that's kind of my overall reflection, is that in doing my research, in doing my writing, and doing my praying, I have been filled with so much joy, peace, and love, and blessings, just with elements of this path, and it's been very beautiful, and I haven't felt the need to call it magic, because in of itself, it is beyond magic. So, thank you for listening, and stay tuned soon for my next reflection as I look back on a year of podcasting. May God keep you. May God bless you. May God shine his face upon you. Take care.